And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
The Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror!
Hello, my fine funky freaks! How's it hanging? Any good news? Oh yes, once again, it's Black History Month. That means it's time for some blaxploitation horror. But which movie to watch? Do we watch Blodzilla? Brother from the Black Lagoon? The Motown Chainsaw Massacre? The Bling? The House of Blacks? Blasferatu? Rosemary's Baby Dad? The Blackadook? Invasion of the Weave Snatchers? The Invisible Black Man? The Fly Fly? The Cabin in the Hoods? An African Werewolf in London? The Phantom of the Hip Opera? Well, the answer is none of those! Because today, we're watching 1972's Blackula. And it's out of sight! Except it isn't out of sight because we watched it. Alright, here it is.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Vault of Startling Monster Horror Tales of Terror. I am one of your co-hosts this evening, Mr. Luke Giaconetti. Would like to thank everyone for downloading and listening to our show today. I can't do this by myself, so left to right across this little crypt of ours, we have my brother, Mr. Jason Giaconetti.
Sir, I suddenly find your manner as distasteful as your cognac.
Yes.
Oh, and there he is in the next coffin over. There's the hair metal hero, Chris Tyler.
That is the rudest I've ever seen in my life. Sue me.
He said it. You can't unsay it. There you go. And rounding out this little undead party, it's Two True Freaks OG Chris Honeywell.
Dracula was the creme de la creme of camp.
That was my alternate.
Oh my gosh. And that pretty much says it all. Go ahead.
My alternate was, did you see the rags he had on? Bad cape.
Beat him out of those rags.
So if you can't tell what movie we're talking about, I think you might need to check yourself, okay? Because it is such a way back machine all the way to 1972. And we are going to be talking about tonight on the podcast, Blackula. And I promise you, it will at least be time well spent, as opposed to an exchange of banalities with pseudo-intellectuals and dilettantes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so that's all I have to say about that. Now, couple of things. First up, okay, now, why are we covering Blackula? Well, one, frankly, I think any excuse to watch Blackula is probably a good excuse, all right?
Yeah.
Secondly, as we're recording this, okay, it is February. February is Black History Month, and we had had some discussions. We'd done some other African-American themed films over the years. I'm thinking we did Tales from the Hood. Yeah. We did both Candyman and then the second Candyman, right? Both, mm-hmm. All three of those films doing with this. But, you know, blaxploitation horror was a very brief but memorable subgenre in the 70s, and the best remembered and probably I'd say most would say best film from that cycle is Blackula. So the ridiculous title notwithstanding, we thought that this would be a good film to talk about as part of Black History Month, to talk about the idea of Black horror films, but going back before what we think of in the modern context, back in the, you know, in the early 70s as part of the blaxploitation larger cinematic scene. And Blackula, oh yeah, this film is pretty firmly set in the blaxploitation scene, I would say.
Mm-hmm. It's all the better for it.
I thought I'd seen it before. I thought I'd watched it back in college, but it turns out I'd watched Scream, Blackula, Scream. So
Yes.
This was a refreshing surprise for me.
Oh, it was very refreshing by the fact that it was not beholden to any modern sensibilities, which means I had a blast watching this for 93 minutes this morning.
It's a fast 93 minutes too. Yep. It just whips right along and stays fun and all the way through.
It trades on the zeitgeist of vampires just to as soon as Blackula wakes up in the modern day, like, we're assuming you know what's going to kill a vampire. We're assuming you know that it needs to sleep in its coffin. We're assuming you know all that shit already, so we can just dive into the fun.
Yep. Yeah. Well, if this was done today, it would be 2.5 hours. And
go ahead,
like,
Chris,
it would be like 2.5 hours if it was done today.
And the first 35 minutes would be Mama Walde and his wife sailing to Transylvania.
Yeah, yeah, and then they would have to cover all the lore and everything like that, even though everybody still already knows, you know, if we don't even know even more, you know, 50 some years later.
Well, you know, the thing is that Billy says it when Billy and Bobby, the two interior decorators, right, when they're shopping for the items inside Castle Dracula, you know, Bobby says, oh, he's a big movie. I've seen all his movies. He's a big star, right? We've all seen Dracula movies. I watched this with two of my kids, and my younger boy kept saying, it's like, oh, of course, like in every Dracula movie. Or he kept, you know, because even at 13, he knows the score, right? You know, like when they land at the port of Los Angeles, like, well, got to bring them to America. Of course. Right. How else are we going to have a movie? Right.
It's not the Demeter. It's whatever cargo ship they sent the stuff over in. You know, like
I like that. They haven't looked in that coffin yet by the time they dragged it. You know, they were basically they're plundering all the they're going to sell all the antiques because. We know, all gay people are antique dealers and look alike.
Well, if you've been to Provincetown,
they all look alike.
It's not far off from the truth.
Every summer.
Oh, boy.
I went down there for a whale watch with Maureen a couple of years ago. It was a great experience.
Yeah, you went down there for the bear watch.
Oh, stop it. You.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
We went into one guy's shop. And he said, there's only three reasons you'd be down here other than the whale watch. You're having a secret affair. You want to buy antiques. And I can't remember what the last thing was. But it's just like, okay.
I was going to say, Hero, if you're going for the bear watch, who's the bear and who's the watch, right? That's all. I'm just putting it out there. You know what I'm saying?
It's remarkably chaste during the daylight hours.
I'm sure it is, dude. I mean, like, you know, they kind of have an economy at some point, you know? Yeah. It's like, you know, you can't just all be, like, you know, completely debaucherous and stuff. I mean, it's like, you know.
No, but seriously, if you ever are down... Yeah. In New England, specifically Cape Cod, specifically Provincetown, do a whale watch because you will get your money's worth. So, going back to Blackula.
Yeah. So, Blackula was one of the I've seen this movie a ton of times, and it's funny because Haley asked me tonight when we got back from field hockey. She said, "What movie are you guys doing tonight?" I said, "Blackula." She goes, "Mean the movie I've seen like 100 times?" And I go, "You mean the movie you've seen bits and pieces of 100 times, but never probably sat and watched the whole thing?" She goes, "Yeah, it's probably more accurate," right? Which is true because she's seen this. We catch this all the time on like Stars or something like that. They'll have it on. I'm like, "Ooh, Blackula, let's pop this on." And I'm like, "What part are we at?" You know, kind of thing. And she knows like bits and pieces of this movie. But a lot of that, what she knew about this before we obviously ever saw it, was the fact that my good friend George Stevenson, he owned a company called Geometric Design. Then he sold that, and now he owns Blackheart Models. His best selling, he always said one of his best selling busts when he was doing the one quarter scale bust for Geometric Design was his Blackula bust. And it was like, ooh, because there was no other Blackula pieces on the market. There just was none. That's one of the first pieces I ever built. In fact, I built the Blackula bust before I ever watched Blackula the movie. I knew what Fred Williamson looked like and stuff like that, like kind of like this, you know, I made the things more purple than they maybe should have been, but whatever. And then I've actually done a second one of the 1/4 scale with the new base, and he came out with a 1-for-1 full size. Sorry.
That happened.
What happened there? Sorry, guys.
It's good reset. Yeah,
sorry, I got a ton of feedback on that. I didn't know what happened there. Anyway, one of the things that George had always said when he was starting the new company, doing full scale busts and wall hangers, he's like, "What piece did you want to see?" And I've always said to him, "I said Blackula. I said do Blackula again, man. I'm telling you right now, you're gonna sell a ton of them." He goes, "Oh no, I am." He goes, "That's what happened." So he contacted Fred Williamson's son. Not Fred Williamson's, good
no,
lord.
No, it's
Marshall. I can't think of his nickname. William Marshall. Sorry, William. I said the wrong person. Right? William Marshall's son, because William Marshall had passed away. And William Marshall was a huge fan of like models and like building and stuff like that, and like that kind of art and stuff. So his son had said, "Yes, we would love to do this again." And it's funny because I said this, I'm telling you, people are gonna love this. And of course, he announced it, put it out. He sold like hotcakes. It's unbelievable how many people have painted the Blackula 1/4 scale bust, and now are working on the Blackula, full size with the hand.
Looks amazing,
dude! It's awesome. I love. It's just great.
Is it him vamped out where he's got the extra sideburns, or is it?
Yeah. Okay. So he came out with a So George came out with a wall hanger, and he's got his hand and he's holding the stake in one hand. It just looks amazing. It's a very large, it's a 1-to-1 scale, obviously, but it's a larger scale than obviously the 1/4 scale bust. But yeah. So many people started painting the 1/4 scale bust. It was one of his best sellers. He actually came out with a separate base that said Blackula and had like a tombstone and all this stuff. It was really cool. And so many people have actually painted it, so that when people start selling off their collections or whatever, like, it's amazing how many people have that as part of their collection and how different everyone paints, their take on that is, you know, kind of thing. So, but that has always been one of my, I've always, you know, one of my favorite pieces I ever painted, one of the first pieces I ever painted. And it's on my shelf next to the other one, which I've now painted much more recently. And if I ever get back to painting anything ever again, I have to do the Blackula bust. That was one of the ones that was on the next in line to do. But it's funny that that is such a beloved piece, that in this movie is so, like, of all the Black PlayStation movies, like Luke said, this is probably the best one of an actual movie. And it's actually one of the ones that a lot of people know. Even if they've never seen it, they know Blackula, kind of thing, which is, I think
it's like one of the most perfect titles for a Blaxploitation horror movie. It's just
if this doesn't come out, we never get Blade in Marvel Comics, right? Like, that's just not happening.
Yeah.
It's probably more influential than a lot of people think, because we probably wouldn't have got that spate of African American themed horror movies that you mentioned already, that we've already covered. Like, this clearly would have had.
Yeah, well, and the title Blackenstein doesn't work as well, you know.
No.
Well, so a couple of things. First off, yes, right. That was originally the sequel that that AIP was going to make, was Blackenstein, right? They were going to do Blackula and then Blackenstein. But Blackula was actually one of the top grossing films of 1972.
Yep.
Nice.
And so Samuel Z. Arkoff, he's not one to, you know, look money in the face. So instead of doing Blackenstein, they did Scream Blackula Scream, right?
And we never got the Blummy.
Never got the Blummy.
I know a place in downtown Boston you can get a Blummy for $10.
Oh my god.
but yeah, But if you look just coming out in the next, and basically the five or six years following, right, Blackula, we do in fact get Scream Blackula, split screen the next year. We get Blackenstein, Ganja and Hess, right, which is a kind of a different take on a vampire film. Abby, which is sort of like the take on The Exorcist. Sugar Hill, which was another movie we looked at because Sugar Hill is a voodoo zombie movie, right? And if you're going to make
a possession sort of thing. I remember Sugar Hill being really good.
Yeah, it is.
Sugar Hill is good. It's not quite as punchy as Blackula.
Right.
Right. But, I mean, to me, it's like, okay, if you're going to make... If you're in the middle of the 70s and you're going to make a black-themed horror movie, a voodoo zombie movie makes perfect friggin' sense to me, right?
Yeah.
You know, you get, you know, Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde, which is a great title that I've never seen, but I've always loved that title. Isn't Werewolf of Washington Heights from around that same era, too?
Yes.
Which is another great title, right? I've never seen that one.
Is that Rudy Moore in that, I think?
That's bad. Making my list right now.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong. Werewolf of Washington Heights. 1973. Dean Stockwell. Let me see. All right, you guys keep going. I got to look.
Well, So, but in any event, right? So you're right, because without these earlier ones that now are seen kind of as camp, right? Then we don't get the more serious ones that come on later, like we talked about, right? Besides the one that we talked about, of course, one I always think of Bones, right, from that same, from the early 2000s. Killjoy, right around the same time, is another one. People Under the Stairs, even, could be considered from that sort of take, right? And, you know, Black Devil Doll from Hell, that's one right up your alley, right, Honeywell? Didn't you cover
that?
You covered that over. Media masochist.
I'm pissed. I know, and that one used to be all over the internet, and it's like disappeared since. So I've never been able to watch it again. Not that I'm like, you know, busting down the door to watch that one again, but
right. But the thing about Blackula compared to most of these movies, right, especially the ones from the same era, is that yes, it is a straight up blaxploitation film and also a vampire film, but it serves both sides of that coin really well, right? This is a really well put together modern, air quotes up to the mic, vampire movie. I compare this, and Jay, you may have a different take on this, but I compare this very favorably to Dracula AD 1972 and Satanic Rites of Dracula, which similarly took the Gothic Count Dracula and placed him in a modern context, right? As far as those films kind of go in their own direction, right? They're definitely a pair. Here, this film is very much this is a vampire on the loose story. It's just set in 1970s Los Angeles, and I think it works really well because it doesn't play itself for laughs, right? Ooh. There's some bits where it's kind of poking fun a little bit, but
it has some humor in it.
Yeah.
It starts out with the, you know, the beginning sequence with Dracula, but when it goes to the title, you know, the credit sequence at the beginning, awesome, it could be a comedy because it's got that animated, you know. It's not like the Pink Panther where it sort of gags, but it's still like a cartoon, you know, bat flying around and picking up ladies and stuff. So, like, when you first watched it, you're like, maybe this could be like, you know, a love at first bite type comedy or something like that. But no, it just plays it pretty straight. It has the other thing that I like about vampire movies. When I kind of sympathized with everybody.
Right.
I wouldn't have been disappointed if Blackula got his bride and disappeared for more movie.
I thought that's made where off it was into going. The sun,
and rode off into the sunrise.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and you know that's the thing is that really to me the strength of this is William Marshall plays this completely straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Prince Mamawalde, because of that, to me, is one of the best cinematic vampires of all time. Because, like you say,
feel sympathy for him, but he's still a vampire. He's still stalking and killing people in the streets. You know, it's funny because you talk about the vampire trappings that we all know all of them. It's funny that one of the vampire trappings that did exist at the time, but was not as popular, became more popular in the 80s through today when he kills the photographer, right? Uh-huh. And the prince follows her to her house and she's in the dark room. He's able to enter her house without her permission. Right?
Yes.
Because yeah. that was not a big thing until what, 1985, The Lost Boys?
Yeah. Right? So
became a big deal. And then we see that through Buffy the Vampire Slayer and everything that comes after that. Whereas in the 70s, that wasn't such a big deal. So it's
I think it started in Salem's Lot. Like, I think Salem's Lot was the first Lot one where.
Too, yeah. So, well,
but I liked that he sort of chose, like, that maybe he didn't really want to drink blood that much, but whenever he attacked somebody, he was like, he would growl and rah, like, you know, so he'd like maybe waited as long as he could until just the animalistic vampire, you know, bloodthirst took over, and then he was back to being, you know, he wasn't like Dracula, who was just sort of like toying with mortals, you know, and he was once they pissed him off enough, but you know, he was generally going out and drinking champagne and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is though, I think what they do a really good job of here, is that when he is attacking somebody, when he is going to be, you know, drinking blood and stuff, they did make him look, as if he had lost control. So he's always in control of everything until that happens. And then it wasn't just done by saying, oh, well, he's out of control. He's crazy. You know, like they went actually like changed his appearance. They made him look, more animalistic. They made it whatever kind of thing, you know, it changed things so that it was easy to identify. Well, okay. Shit's about to get real. Cause you know, like he obviously his eyebrows are thicker and his hair's messed up. And like, that's like, so, but I think that's the big thing by playing the role completely straight, by literally not making this tongue in cheek and laughable and whatever, but by actually playing it straight, William Marshall creates, he creates a believability in an absolute unbelievable situation.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? He lends an air of...
The only thing I found unbelievable about him was his pronunciation of lover. He had Louver, my Louver.
You know, he's got that sort of, you know, North African sort of accent. They're kind of vague as to where, right? So somewhere in Africa.
Yeah. So and then the main obviously Vanetta McGee. Obviously is in there as well, and she's known for all coming. I mean, she passed away in 2010, but she was known for all kinds of stuff, especially during that run in the 70s in Shaft in Africa. She was in the Iger Sanction with Clint Eastwood. She was eventually Man in the, you know, from 84, you know, things like that. So she was
That is her, isn't it?
I mean, she was on LA, for Christ's sake, too. But and she was in Bustin' Loose. So I'm just saying, you know, but she was in a lot of those things. And she's a face that you saw. And like she was, you know, did a bunch of TV and stuff like that. But she's got a look to her where, I mean, again, you know, I mean, you know, in the 70s, I mean, you know, she was in, you know, she was in these type of movies. And that's, you know, kind of thing where you made your money, you know, kind of thing. So.
This was like had a lot of 70s TV actor looking, like the guy who played the white cop looked like Mike Brady from the Brady Bunch, you know,
that's Lieutenant Peters is Gordon Pinsett, and where is he? He's in a bunch of TV stuff. He was on Due South. He was in, you know, he was in a few other movies.
Yeah. He's got a face made for TV.
Yeah.
Or actually, he's got that face and hair made for TV. And this is my question is, why the hell did Elijah Cook have a hook?
Because why not?
Yeah.
A hook for a cook.
Why not? Why not?
Because he does, right?
I was like, oh, there's going to be some sort of, the first scene I saw him and you don't see the hook. And then the second they reveal the hook and I'm like, oh, there's going to be a gag with this hook. And the only gag with it is he scratched his head with it once. And that was about the only thing he did. And he also had the classic fake hook where you could tell he's just holding onto it in his hand because one arm is like a foot longer than the other arm.
Right. So I'm wondering if that, I wonder if it was as simple as the fact, like maybe he had a broken arm and they had like a broken hand, they had to hide it. You know, kind of thing, but
somebody maybe, in the props department said we have this prosthetic clock. Why don't we use it?
Well,
because there's a lot of movies, but they're usually bigger budgeted movies where they'll just add little quirks like that just to make it more interesting. But this wasn't one of those movies. This was like, you know, or else there would have been more of them in the movie. So there had to be like some reason behind it for, you know, for something or. Maybe there was going to be something they cut out or they decided they didn't shoot because of the budget or something. But I was just like, oh, he's got a hook. I wonder what's going to happen with
that. Watching this and seeing him, I was just like, oh, shit, we got the creator of the ultimate computer. Yeah, we have Kirk's defender. Like we have two Star Trek alums only about 5 or 6 years after their appearances in Star Trek.
Star Trek's infamous for, I mean, especially the Next Generation had like, every, you know, workaday actor, you know, was, you can dig him up in Star Trek somewhere between the first two, you know, first two Star Treks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to Blackula.
Well, and, you know, so the thing is, like I said, the one other thing I really liked about this, I do really like Doc Thomas. Okay. Who is, you know, he is the playing the part of, and which is Thomas Rasulala. And they you know, he's best known as a soap opera guy, right? In addition to his blaxploitation work. But he's playing kind of the, you know, Van Helsing role here, right? He's the doctor that's fighting the vampire, right? Yeah. And the scene of Mama Walde and Thomas in the club where they both kind of know something.
Yeah.
They're just dueling back and forth at each other is fantastic. Right. That may be my favorite scene because they're both really smart. They both know something about the other one, but they're not going to let the other one in on it. Oh, and it's just these guys just acting at each other. Right. And in literally a movie about a black vampire. It's just these two dudes acting at each other. And it's fantastic. Right.
The club had one of my other favorite things in it, which is the band, the Hughes Corporation.
Well, they were great.
Such powerful singers that they don't even need microphones front of a full band. I was just like, watching that and being in a band, like watching that and seeing no microphones, all I picture is like your voice just blowing out to nothing after the first song. That was what would happen if that was a real thing. Those would, if they really were pulling that off, they could have been like a weapon for the U.S. government or something like that. Because nobody has a voice so powerful. But all their songs are great.
Yeah, they were definitely appropriate for the era and the club and the time. I got to circle back to Doc Thomas though for a hot second. You said your favorite scene was the verbal warfare there in the club. My favorite scene is still with him, and it's when they go dig up the white interior decorator, and he is not fucking around. As soon as that coffin opens, he's going to fucking town on him. Like, there's zero hesitation.
Yeah. And no remorse. His girlfriend's just like, what the fuck? And he's just like, gotta kill the vampire. She's like, you killed him. He's like, another thing that always tickles me about vampire movies is Blackula gets to look regal for the most part. Everybody else gets turned into like a blue-faced monster, you know, and
you can't really do that color palette on the African-American skin and have it look great. Somebody's got to come
up
with
a better...
It didn't
look good on the white gay guy in the grave either.
But in general, like, you got to pick... There needs to be a different color palette for exsanguinated African-American.
Yeah, no, they sort of made him look ashy. They had the ashy look, you know.
Which, yeah, probably not the best call.
Right, but what... I mean, it's kind of a no-win situation, I think, in this case. Yeah. But what I also like is they didn't... as what they would have done in a modern movie is they would have, like, by the time we meet the doctor, he's already pretty suspicious that there's a vampire at work, and it doesn't have to go over his whole, you know, his whole process of figuring out, you know, is this what's going on? Is this a vampire? Well, I don't believe in no, well, he's already figured it out in his head before we've even met the character, you know, or he hasn't figured it out, but he has a good idea. And then all the rest of it just plays out, like, naturally with the story of, and he doesn't have to work very hard to convince anybody else after that. So there, you don't have to go through that whole process. Like, yeah,
I know
me too.
I have to convince them, but how am I going to do it the easiest way? All right, you know what? I'll just show my boss, show the chief of police.
Vampire. We'll just go find a vampire, and the vampire cabbie. That cabbie had the most crazy cabbie outfit I've ever seen in my life. I wish all cabbies dressed like that, man. She was rocking that cabbie outfit. But, like, the scene where when she comes after Elijah Woods, she just, like, kicks down the door and just runs screaming at him. I love it. I'm sure they were like, we better do this in slow-mo to make it scarier, or else it might have been so comical.
Yeah,
it's a good shot.
I thought the scene that made me laugh the hardest, that I was just like, oh, this is fucking great, is where he's picking up 50, and even if those were the lightest 50,
it doesn't matter, he bullseyes
ever,
him twice.
Like, in one shot, it's not even a cutaway. For the stuntman, he just whips that thing down and nails that cop with a 50-gallon drum, and I'm just like, yes, that was great.
Yeah, and so the kids said to me, they're like, well, aren't these guys supposed to be trained? I was like, who trains to go into, like, a Donkey Kong situation?
Yeah, over training for that.
We're gonna spend all night. God, ColecoVision, let's go.
American Gladiators and Takeshi's Castle weren't a thing yet. People wouldn't have had any idea what to do.
Well, that's the thing, is all the cops were ill-equipped, and they didn't even let the other cops in on the fact that you obviously couldn't tell them, like, we're all hunting a vampire. No. But that just meant all the cops were just, like, being fed into a meat grinder, basically, in this movie.
Yeah. That stunt where they take the tumble down the stairs, man, oof.
That was quite a stunt, too, yeah, especially it's the cops tumbling down, and then the heaviest guy...
Yeah.
Comes rolling down over the cops.
And we're talking like the industrial steel steps.
Stairs. Yeah.
Concrete or steel. Yeah. It's just like.
And that poor dude apparently is just like either he's just somebody with the chemical plant. He has nothing to do with anything.
Yep. Yep.
They didn't tell him that they were about just like, you better leave here. It's dangerous here. They just, like, ran past him. And yeah, there was just a reckless regard for human life that is typical of big city cops that added that extra bit of realism to this movie. And then the one cop, they're following the vampire antique dealer, and they're like, what did he look like? He's like, I don't know. They all look alike. And I'm like, that's not how that works, dude. I've never heard that stereotype before.
No. Well, I think they're playing off the idea that you would be reversing it.
Right.
Flip it. Reverse it right there.
Strike that. So, I mean, the thing is, you know, and here you talked about the makeup on all the vampires and how Mama Walde gets to look, you know, dignified, right, and the others don't. I will say that. They set up the scene in the warehouse great, because the doc and the detective are talking, and he says that vampires multiply geometrically. You start with one, then next night you get two, the next night you get four, and so forth, right?
Yeah.
So we know, as the audience, we know who some of the vampires are.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know all of them.
but we don't know all of them because they've all been out doing their thing, so that when they start showing up, we're like, oh, okay, there's Juanita, there's Bobby, and it's like, okay, who the hell are these people? And it's like, well, there's the people that they bit. Right? And so I love that whole bit in the warehouse. And Jay, I thought of you when they start lighting people on fire. I know that you're always a sucker for some poor dude in a burn suit.
Yeah, whole body burns, man.
It's always a dude, right?
Even that was another thing, is that's not how kerosene lamps work either. They have to be lit first to do that, but that's okay. As soon as that started happening, I'm like, all right, they're just bombs.
Hurricane lamps are not Molotov cocktails in my experience.
Right.
But
look, we're not going to let reality get in the way of a good story. Okay?
No.
But I've already bought into the fact that there's vampires.
Everything up to this point. That's
really bought it at that point. I bought the fact that Barnes is a vampire who's sneaking in with them. Even my son's like, isn't Barnes a vampire? I'm like, yeah, he is. Let's hold on a minute, okay?
Oh my god.
And to me, it's like when the film has thrown it's completely saying, yeah, it's a vampire movie. We called it Blackula. Then he turns into a bat, and I'm like, yup, I love it.
It's one of the better bat transitions and bat flying away scenes I've ever seen in
it's pretty good.
Vampire movie.
I mean, that's always tough, right? Because you either do it like something like that, or you go kind of like, I swear I'm not making a joke, like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, where you animate that transformation, you know? And in black and white, you can get away with that. In color, that's a little bit harder to pull off, you know?
And it didn't look like a rubber bat on a bungee cord either, like it usually does.
But it's like, but of course he turned into a bat. He's you know, he got bit by Count Dracula. Why the hell not? You know, all I could think of course, is Horror of Dracula. He must be able to turn into a bat or a mist, you know?
Yeah.
How else could he get in here? He certainly didn't, you know, he certainly didn't have my wife hire somebody to drag his coffin into the basement. That would never happen. Well, that's another story.
And Horror of Dracula, they didn't do any of that. Like, well, he's a wolf, he's a bat, he's a mist. Like, they say that could happen. But then, like, I love that in Helsing, he's like, none of that stuff, that doesn't happen. That's not real. I'll tell you what's real, buddy. What's real is that he's going to kill everybody. He's like, well, my God.
What's real is that your wife's going to look way more satisfied with him than she ever did with you, buddy.
Take that, Michael Goff. You know,
don't run off me somebody's gentleman's gentleman, pal. Okay?
Oh, my God.
That's the thing. And you know, you guys, I've said it, you know, this movie, it just... boom, boom. It just keeps moving forward. It's never boring. It's tight paced. It really doesn't waste a lot of time. I really just enjoy this movie. It's a straight vampire movie. And then you look at it in the context of the idea of course, American International Pictures is going to look at the blaxploitation films and say, we can make a horror movie out of this.
Of course.
Right? And it's like, and the fact that it was not only, you know, that I can watch it and say this is a good movie, but it was also a financial success. It's like, well, you know, that warms the cockles of my cold dead heart, right?
Yeah, I mean, it must, and it didn't have much of a budget. There, you know, it was mostly just sort of, you know, it was only a few special effects, you know, maybe an exterior shot of Dracula's castle in the beginning, and that's it. You know, not a lot of, and you know, they probably . And when you watch movies like this, it's just sheer luck when they turn out good. You know, they picked the right screenwriter and director who actually did it. Like, because AIP didn't care if it was good or bad as long as you could get it in the drive-ins.
Right.
And it had Blackula on it and it could get people high knees in the seats. But, you know, the cast and crew we're like, okay, let's do this, you know, and everybody commits to, everybody was committed. The script is so tight, and you know, it doesn't waste any time with his bride, you know, going like, what do you mean I'm your reincarnated bride?
And, no, I love you. Know,
yep, she's just like I just know, and they just move forward with it because we know where that's going anyway. You know, so why waste time and money, you know, developing that more than you really have to, you know. So it's also perfect.
You get the feeling that, you know, that Tina doesn't have all that much going on, right? We only ever see her hanging out with her sister and her sister's boss/boyfriend.
Wait, what's his name again? Skillet.
Skillet.
No, Skillet. But
Big
yeah.
Skillet.
Oh, Skillet. But so it's like you almost get the feeling like Tina's like, yeah, okay, this debonair, you know, good looking prince from Africa is coming and telling me, BT Dubs, you're my reincarnated wife.
Like, got it.
You know.
Yeah. Hey, here, have some fancy French champagne.
Like, this is like a mummy movie sort of thing. I'm like, yeah, that is something you get in mummy movies. That's absolutely.
Well, the reincarnated bride has come up several times in vampire movies. I mean, Fright Night's got it. You know,
definitely comes up in vampire movies, but it's like a trope in mummy movies, right? You got to have the girl that looks just like a princess, you know. But again, I mean that's fine. It's a trope for a reason. It's a trope because it works, right? And like you say, Chris, as soon as that happens and Tina is willingly going along with Mama Walde, it's like, well, we know how this is going to go, right?
Yeah.
You know? And as an aside, okay, I got no problem with, you know, with Vanetta McGee playing a young lady named Tina. But imagine if her name was Gina. People like, damn, Gina! Martin.
Damn, Gina!
Oh, boy.
All I did during the whole Martin episode. Damn, Gina!
Yes.
In an earlier version, you know, Michelle's name was Felicia, and it's just never mind.
Bye.
Bye, Felicia.
Hi, Felicia.
And she gets to die 3 times in the movie.
Yep.
Yeah. It's bread and butter for an actor.
Mm-hmm. 3 death scenes? Come on. How much fun is that?
I got choices now. I can do it different ways.
Yeah.
I just wonder, in those 150 years, was he just, every time the sun went down, he just had to lay in his coffin for 150 years?
I think so. I think that's the implication.
He had his shit together remarkably well then.
He comes out snarling. I think that, you know, and as soon as he gets a little blood in him, he's kind of like, oh, I'm a suave motherfucker.
First meal in 150 years, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Make anybody suave. Get out
anyway, so it didn't matter. It just, you know, he's trapped in there. They happen to go, you know, at night, right? Bobby and Billy decide to go to the warehouse at night. They could have probably solved a lot of problems if they had gone during the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. it's like,
look, antiquity is wait for no man.
How many vampire movies, you know, okay, we're gonna shut down Dracula and his brides. When are we gonna go? 6:15, right?
Yeah. Dusk. What time is dusk tonight? Yeah, let's go right at that time.
I mean, that's why I love it. Remember we watched Vampires a million years ago, John Carpenter's there. They go at noon, right?
I knew. Yeah. They put in, and then they drag them out into the sun.
Drag them out, yeah, that's right.
The problem is that book is better than that movie.
Well, but that's
Really love that movie.
I love that movie too.
The book's still better. I mean, saying it. It's a pretty good book.
Yeah.
So.
You know, they serve different ends, right?
They do.
Film.
And I like both of my ends to be served.
Oh boy.
You're weighted down at both ends, boss man. That's all I can say.
that was one of the highest end casts that John Carpenter ever. Well, I mean, he got Kurt Russell before, but like.
Yeah, but Kurt Russell was with him before he was like really Kurt Russell. You
know? It was
still in the. Wait, Disney actor Kurt Russell? Yeah, he wasn't Kurt Russell yet.
You know, riding on skateboards with Charles Bronson, Kurt Russell.
Yeah, he was the one who made Kurt Russell into an action star, you know, type of things. Yeah. But James Wood was already pretty established by that time and acknowledges a really good actor who would do genre movies.
Oh, sure. No, as an aside, all you young listeners out there, you know, you're working on doing voices, you know, trying to do impersonations and stuff. James Woods, easy one to start with. You just say only a few words at a time, kind of raise up at the end. How you doing? James Woods, nice to meet you. Hey, how you doing? James Woods, nice to meet you. Easy, easy. This is bread and butter.
Ooh, a piece Michael of candy.
Caine sounds like
ooh,
a question.
Piece of candy.
Michael Caine is the easiest. Because you only say a few words at a time, right?
And not every vowel.
These are the building blocks, right? The building blocks are annoying your friends and family, you know.
especially in modern. It used to be Howard Cosell, then it's changed. Now it's like Arnold.
What I just saw. That's right.
Howard Cosell.
This is insane. I cannot believe this.
We have here one Lane Meyer. Sorry. Yeah.
How can this be considered a legitimate sport?
Like a couple weeks ago, I actually went and watched an episode of Howard Cosell's Saturday Night Live. He actually had a show on, I think, ABC called Howard Cosell Saturday Night Live. That just got squashed by the other Saturday Night Live.
I can only imagine them. Tonight we have a show where we're talking to a typical American couple who happen to be aliens from outer space. Comedy will...
I have it on good authority that the end of the world is going to end on February 14th, 2025. Valentine's Day. Bummer.
Might be his best delivery in both movies.
Yeah, ironically, just as we're recording this, my family was watching Groundhog Day. So that's for a Bill Murray connection. And what's also funny and apropos for this show is I had not one, not two, but three of my children say, hey, this is like that movie Happy Death Day. I said, yes, it is. You'll recall they mentioned this movie in that one. Oh, yeah. You know, had the same conversation three times.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. But again, see, the thing is, I do want to say this, and I've said this a couple of times. So, and my wife was kind of, you know, helped me out with this morning. You tell people, you say, oh, watching a horror movie for the podcast. What are you watching? You say Blackula. It sounds friggin' ridiculous. Yes. Right? Mm-hmm. But so you almost have to lead with that. It's like, yes, I know it has a ridiculous title.
Right.
What else do you call a black vampire?
Right. I mean, I don't know what the politically correct term
is. It's Dracula himself who gives him the name. Yeah. You know, sort of like Palpatine, I will call you Lord Vader. He's like, you're going to be Blackula. But it was kind of, you know, a humiliating thing for him to say. And I was like, oh, no. So he's really named Blackula in this movie. And then when we got to modern times, he's just like, fuck it. I'm not calling myself Blackula. And I'm like, good for you. Thank you.
And Prince Mamwalde is that's a name that has some command to it.
Yeah. And yeah, yeah.
I do like in the sequel where they say somehow Blackula returned, right? They just
gloss over the because he went in too good a shit. And I gotta say, his disintegration scene, even though it's, you know, a bunch of crossfades and stuff, is really good and gross and nice. Yeah.
My daughter literally said, "That's gross." When she, so right on the money.
Yeah. My mother-in-law said the same thing.
He did the silver shamrock thing, and all of a sudden, there's just bugs on worms. His. You know, part of worms. Death is bugs coming out of your face. Yeah.
I like that too. That they not only so I feel the need to say this because I say it all the time on Earth Destruction Directive when it's recorded, that when a character takes their own life by suicide. Suicide's not the right choice. Okay, you have things to live for. There are people that care about you. Please, if you're having thoughts of self-harm, seek out help. There's the hotline you can reach out to. There's all sorts of ways to get help. In a fictional context, I'm okay with Mamwalde taking his own afterlife because he literally has nothing to live for. I think it's a dramatic choice. And like you said, Chris, every character we can sympathize for in this. But from a horror nerd standpoint, I like that he's killed by sunlight because, again, that's what Christopher Lee did, right? Christopher Lee in Horror Dracula gets killed when Van Helsing pulls down the curtains and he disintegrates. And then that's how, now, I don't believe that's how they bring him back in Scream, Blackula, Scream, but in Dracula, Prince of Darkness, he's Ash. How do you bring him back? Well, we thought of something, right? So I do like that. It's not just, Dracula shouldn't be killed with a stake in the heart. It's too reversible, right? We've all seen House of Frankenstein. Sure.
You just call it out, right? So when you're the big bad vampire dude, sunlight, right? Sunlight, running water, something, you know.
See, what big if I were him, I would have been just like, well, I spent 150 years in a coffin. I'll just take 150 more years, wait for her to get reincarnated again, and take out my hostility on humanity in the meantime.
I do like that when the cop shoots Tina, and he's got his little manifesto ready to go. It's like, this tomb will be your grave sort of situation, right? And it's like, oh snap, y'all done fucked up now. He's a bad.
Yeah, and he's got that voice to just boom it through that whole chemical warehouse.
Yes.
You know, you're all going to die now.
I remember when he did that on that one episode of Pee-wee's Playhouse. Remember when the King of Cartoons showed up and everything kind of went south at that one point, you know?
Wait, was he the King of Cartoons?
No.
He was, in fact, the King of Cartoons, yes.
Oh my God. Jesus. Oh my God. I never realized that.
This movie keeps getting better and better.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, the King of Cartoons, I was thinking about on Family Guy, you know, Lois, the King of Cartoons is coming over here and I will not have you humiliate me. But no, I mean, that's the thing. Again, so if this, and now the thing is, you can find this movie pretty much anywhere.
I watched it on Tubi.
I also watched it
on archive.org.
I also watched it on Tubi. You can also find it on Pluto. You can find it on Plex. You can find it on numerous other streaming services, free, ad supported, or otherwise. It is, like I said, it's a brisk, I think like 93 minutes, something like that, 92 minutes. Yeah. It is an absolute hoot. You will not be bored. And it's a pretty legit vampire movie from the 70s. Again, ridiculous title notwithstanding. If I'll put it this way. If you like AIP movies, you will like this. If you like even like the gothic Hammer style vampires, there's enough to... Wait for it, guys. Sink your teeth into it. You will also enjoy it. So,
if you like the 70s aesthetic, it's got the music. Like at the beginning, when he's attacked by Dracula, they play the you know, famously used in Kill Bill, the wee, I'm freaking out. Music.
And if you like the Dracula story, this is they do it slightly differently, but it's pretty much an update.
Yeah.
If you like giant afros, you are.
Who doesn't?
There are some beautiful afros.
There's there's outfits. There's,
oh my God, every outfit in this movie. Every
nightclub. See it in an old 70s nightclub, you know, with like signs on the wall that say, "We do not serve minors."
Yes.
Well, I don't think anybody with
you got to go down the you got to go to another club without a sign to go if you're a minor, you know.
Don't make me tap the sign, pal.
And if you know anything about one Chris Honeywell, and I do, and you like fly 70s honeys, this is the movie for you.
Oh my God!
There's some beautiful women in this movie.
Yes.
I mean, just. There's some foxy ladies in this, and it's
yes,
like
yes, there are.
And y'all
let's
know.
Just, let's more... just say Chris Honeywell has the jungle fever.
let's just.
So you can send comments to freakvault@gmail.com.
I am prepared for all hate mail. Like I said, sue me. Actually, you know what? At this point in the episode, blow me. I don't give a shit.
Hey, you know, I mean, that's the thing, right? I understand. I think I said something somewhere when we did Tales from the Hood. You got four white guys watching this movie, okay? But we're coming at it from an honest place, okay? So we understand that, you know, we're not where the, you know, from viewing it as from a sincere point of view as a film, right? So it's like, yeah, but again, you need that, right?
It's time.
You can't have
yeah.
you know, the homely lasses. You need the good-looking ones, the buxom ones.
You need the good-looking women and people in 1972, regardless of whatever their ethnic stripe is or was, that's how they were talking.
Yeah.
All right? You can cast aspersions upon it in a modern context if you want, but if you're watching a movie 53 years old in a modern context, you're the one with the problem.
Well, like, old blaxploitation movies often, like, really leaned into the lingo and stuff, and this was not as... It's there, but that's just there because that's the way people talk there. It's not really, you know, exaggerated or accentuated. It's just there, and it's not like a lot of blaxploitation movies, and this was a plus from them, really, like, leaned into the sort of, like, you know, the Black Panthers, Black Power stuff that was going on then. This doesn't do it overtly. It just has, you know, the Black characters are actually fully fleshed out and intelligent and, you know, just living their life. It's just like the interesting life of that cocktail waitress / photographer.
Yeah.
Will take pictures and then have to go back, like, put a jacket on in her cocktail outfit, you know, go into her dark room in her cocktail outfit and start developing the pictures, and then whip back to the bar to deliver the pictures.
That's a great.
I don't know if that was ever a job that ever existed. I mean, they had Polaroids in those days. Come on.
But she's serious. I mean, she's got a dark room, yes. Right?
She's
Yeah.
Oh, Chris.
And she's got a classic 70s record player with the two speakers attached to it that flip out from the box, you know.
And you know, that's a real photographer, not these people nowadays that they have a section on their Instagram where it's just like one picture they took on a hike and then a lot of close ups of their own eye.
Yeah, it's their phone with a filter on it. That's basically all it is, you know.
But that is a great gag, though, because, you know, again, it's another one of the vampire tropes about not appearing in a mirror. Okay, yeah. Well, you're not appearing in the lens either, and it's like, oh, that's and it to me at first it's subtle because Mamba Walde, you know, puts his hand up, he doesn't want to be photographed, and you're like, oh, okay, silly, you know, Eastern superstition, I'm afraid, but you know, so I like that bit. And yeah, I mean that's the thing. There is a little bit of the racial stuff because, you know, again, when Thomas is describing the, you know, he says it's like, oh, it seems like, you know, how Black victims get the, you know, they're not getting the best of attention. And he says, you forgetting something? You know, Schaefer was white, and so it's just that. And then when the lieutenant is like, well, could it be the Panthers? He's like, killing two interior decorators and a cabbie, you think the Panthers? Hey, anything's possible, you know. Just looking at the angles, man, you know.
Well, the Panthers were infamous for just killing people with two puncture wounds to the neck.
Yeah.
And their decades-long campaign against interior decorators, I mean, volumes have been written over that,
right? Yes.
I'm sorry, every time I mention the Black Panthers, I think of Forrest Gump. I'm sorry for ruining your Black Panther pod.
I fucking hate that movie, but that scene makes me laugh.
Why am I not surprised that you hate Forrest Gump? You should hear his hot takes on Saving Private Ryan.
No, Saving Private Ryan's great.
I'm with you
on Forrest Gump. Like, it's an enjoyable movie, but when I think about it too much, it's like The Breakfast Club.
I really enjoy watching
The Breakfast Club, but when I think about it, it makes me mad.
I still love The Breakfast Club, but that's a generational movie.
Yeah, I love The Breakfast Club too, but like, and when it came out, I didn't think anything of it, but when I watched it as an adult, I'm like, oh, everybody's still, you know, it's like this whole, like, these kids that are going to break with, you know, are breaking with tradition, and they're in the new generation and stuff. And by the end of the movie, they're all like going right to their traditional, the nerd does everybody's homework, and it's just, yeah.
You can't fight the tide of history, man.
Yeah, man.
I guess you can't fight.
And everybody knows the new generation wasn't going to solve anything. It needed attitude if you wanted to change things up. It was attitude. But now we're crossing the streams to a different podcast.
We saw how that hasn't really worked out. So
it worked out pretty well for a while. And then it worked out better than Ruthless Aggression.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, much good did spring from Ruthless Aggression.
Yes. Mainly
one John Chana.
Yes, I said it like Santino Marella.
John Slipping the Chenna is
that is one of my favorite talks of all time. Because John
turns out he's been a dead for 15 years.
John Cena is trying so hard not to break it, he can't stop. He's still laughing. It's hilarious.
But
that's a different podcast.
That's a different podcast. When that one gets recorded, the thing is that again, all you know, again, we've said it several times. This is not a film that's hard to watch in any context. It's an easy watch. It's easy to find. It's a quick watch. I'll have a lot of fun. It's got some legitimate horror chops to it, but it's not gruesome or over the top. It's still an AIP picture. You know, it's PG, I believe, is what it's rated now. You can watch this one with you know, again, my 11-year-old daughter.
Most of the family, just depending.
I don't think there was any cussing in this movie at all.
But in the modern context, the other F word and the N.
But for the time, yeah.
Right. There is some, I will say that, there is some slurs that are now considered inappropriate. They're inappropriate in use in a film, right? They're considered.
Well, the Eddie Murphy, Rudy Ray Moore, thing had lots of N bombs, but they were all spoken by. You can do it. Yeah. You could do it in the context of black people talking to each other, or if it's a period piece set in the Deep South, you know,
This is the former. Both instances of the N word in this are said by one black character to another, one black character to himself. Right,
but it was unheard of in the days of black exploitation in this time period to have white characters saying that all the time. It was usually not, you know, it wasn't presented as being a positive thing, but it was done. You know, where it just isn't good.
So there is that aspect of language for the film. But as you said, Kiro, this is a film from 50 years ago.
Yeah, context is key. I mean,
context is king. Right. Yep. So, but beyond that. Right. I mean, it's typical Monster Mash. Right. There's nothing. I mean, I remember thinking that when I was watching this morning, it's like, you know, this is one of the things, like, I watch a lot of horror stuff, but man, I love a good monster movie because you know what you're getting. It's like comfort food. Right. You know, watching a vampire movie, for me, watching like a monk movie or a werewolf movie or Frankenstein, it's like I'm on board with that because, again, it might just be a pot roast. Right. But I know every time my wife makes pot roast, it's friggin' fantastic. Right. It's not going to be different. It's going to be the same thing that I want to consume. Yeah. And this falls right into that. So if that's something that you're interested in consuming, you will enjoy sitting down with this.
Just before we met for this, I had a bowl of Progresso pot roast soup.
There you go.
And it was delicious.
When my wife makes a pot roast, it's an all day affair. Right, she's got the
cook. Yeah, no, real pot roast can't be beat, man. Oh my god!
I once and I may have told this story, and if I have, I apologize. But I once bribed my friend Joe into driving 8 hours with me to Florida to help my wife and I move by promising him that my wife was making pot roast.
Because whatever works.
I had
pot roast is great because you get to smell it all day. Yeah. So by the time you dig into that pot roast, you've been thinking about it all day.
And you got carrots and potatoes and onions, and they're all roasty and covered with jus.
Did you guys ever see that bad husband viral video where the wife would where, you know, it was sort of a genre for a little while a few years back where, you know, jerky husbands or wives would tape them like acting like a baby or whatever. And this was like a British guy and his wife. She had literally just got out of the hospital like the day before after giving, like having a like extremely long, you know, birthing process. And the husband's just standing in front of her going like, are you making pot roast tonight? And she's like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, you know, you've had a couple days, right? We get that pot roast going. Because it was pot roast night and he was just he needed that pot roast.
All right, that is why home ec needs to go back into schools, because both men and women should learn some basic home skills.
Well,
so if you really want pot roast, you can make
it. Nowadays, like making a cooked meat dish is a very masculine thing to do. It's kind of a trend now, you know. Everybody's like any man worth their salt knows how to smoke something up if they
what crosses gender lines? Eating.
Yeah.
It's kind of fundamental.
It's a great equalizer.
Oh yeah. I've said this for years. I said, if you're a young man, right? And I'm not. But if you were a young man, right, and you're out there and you're complaining about you can't score, you know, with the ladies, you can't, you know, win them over.
Learn to cook.
Yeah, that's right. I said you don't need to be able to be a gourmand. I said you should have a couple of meals, maybe three tops, that are not breakfast, that you can pull out, that you should be able to roast or braise some meat, roast some vegetables, right? Prepare a basic starch, right? And be
rice or noodles. Serve that
rice, a pilaf. Couscous is really freaking easy, okay? And then after, like, maybe if you get like 2 days, say, I'll cook for you and say, hey, why don't you bring dessert? And then you cook for them.
And then she'll roast your meat.
The point is whether they roast
guys, they want to get that's the catch 22 is they want to get married and have someone cook dinner for them, but the best way to get married is to learn to cook dinner to
right.
Romance them in. So.
Because that's how you graduate from boy to, if not man, at least guy. Right? You're at that intermediate stage of guy.
You're guy, right? Dude. Also,
I'm not your dude, bro. Okay.
Hey, bro.
I'm not your
buddy,
bro.
Guy.
We actually made the girl version of that too. The guy version goes around quite a while. We're working on the girl version in my house. I'm not your sister, sweetie, you know?
Well, it reminds
sister,
me of
sweetie, honey.
The animated clerks, like, where they're like, remember that time we worked in the shop in the convenience store in England, and the guy walks in, he goes, pack of fags, what'd you call me? Hey, no offense, mate.
It's a cigarette, mate.
Man.
You're a cigarette.
I'm not your mate, fag.
That is one of the greatest cyclical arguments in all of media, along with Bill and Ted opining the fact that they do not have Eddie Van Halen.
I'm not your mate, fag.
Alright, we are far, far, far afield here.
We're far afield. Go watch Blackula. You will not regret it. Trust us on this one. You will love this
movie. You want that one under your belt, for sure.
Yeah.
And again, watch it on your favorite free ad-supported streaming platform of choice. Tubi, Pluto, Plex, whichever. They're all equally good. What color do you want? You want it like that weird bluish?
I want black.
Black and yellow. Yeah.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS. Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I don't consent to being recorded. I do not consent to anything.